With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, joined as always from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Folks, if you want to call in, we will take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. The number to dial, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. Or you could tweet us a question or a comment at SteveMaxBoxing, at Gabriel_Montoya, at Max Boxing Live. For 90 minutes, it's Boxing Nirvana. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. How you doing, man? What a weekend of fights. We had stuff that looked like WWE. We had some nice come-from-behind wins, and then a controversial main event. And with your favorite thing on the card, open scoring. It was a spectacular weekend. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, and an upset special that I ordered that gave me salmonella, but more on that later. Let's go to round number one. From Bayamon, Puerto Rico, the main event was a WBC-WBA homecoming of the junior welterweight title as Danny Swift Garcia, who ekes out a close controversial win over the game Mauricio Herrera. Your scorer from judges Carlos Colon and Alejandro Rochin each had Swift Garcia on top, 116-112. Gustavo Padilla had the score at 114-114. Heavyweights in action, Deontay Wilder with a first-round destruction over Malik Scott. Wilder goes to 31-0, 31 knockouts. Junior lightweights in action. This was on the Showtime Extreme portion of the card. And it was the resurrection of Juan Ma Lopez scoring an exciting, thrilling second-round TKO-2 over Daniel Ponce de Leon. But, Gabe, everyone wants to know about the main event. Danny Garcia, Mauricio Herrera. In your eyes, who won this fight?
I had Herrera up 8-4. Now, I did have a swing round. I think it was round 7. It was one of those fights. To pull an Emmanuel Stewart, the fight went exactly as I expected it. It was tough to put hands on Herrera. He's just kind of a guy that's very fluid, stays behind the jab, and he stays in a very sideways posture, like a fencer almost. And then when he dips down, he has this way of hiding his right hand and just shooting a lead right. He has a very strange way, very strange style at the time. And unlike kind of movement-based guys, he doesn't really give you a big target to just jab him in the chest. You generally have to deal with his jab. It took Garcia, I think, 4 rounds to really even win a round on my card. But to get on track and to start taking things, power off of his punches, be a little lighter on his feet, I think in the middle rounds he started to pull Herrera towards him and was really kind of coming underneath nicely. He started to come back in the middle of it. But to me, it was Herrera down the stretch of that the bigger 12th round. They were playing his game the whole time, which was a boxing match. But the other thing, and you noted this in your column today, from the word go, I thought Danny Garcia looked starched. He was very dry to start the fight, and I thought he was dehydrated, probably didn't rehydrate right, probably had a lot of trouble making weight. This should have been, I think, the last fight. He should have left and started his campaign at 47. Instead, he's going to begin his campaign on a low note.
Gabe, if you look at the history of Swift Garcia, he began his career in late 2007, and he has never moved up in weight. In essence, he's been a junior welterweight almost from the time he was a world-class, nationally-ranked amateur. And he's 25 years old now. And when a 25-year-old fighter, who theoretically should be in his physical prime, is flat and listless, that to me is all the earmarks of a guy that had problems making weight, who probably should be moving up. And, but that's not to take away from a sterling performance from Mauricio Herrera. He wasn't spectacular, but he did a lot of little things that collectively ended up being big. I mean, just from keeping that right hand right up on his chin to avoid the left hook or to block or parry it. Very good jab from the front side, just really quick and consistent, never giving a flat surface with both his shoulders parallel, ever to Danny Garcia, going in and out, sneaking over right hand. And then on the inside, I thought he absolutely did a Hopkins-esque job of being the wool blanket and smothering and suffocating Danny Garcia. And here's the thing that's interesting, Gabe. Mauricio Herrera, coming into this fight, we knew was not a puncher. He only had 7 professional knockouts, but halfway through the fight, it was him that started to back up Garcia, and it was Garcia retreating. And it's one of the things that I completely disagree with when people say, well, Garcia landed the harder punches. Gabe, to me, people who are saying that are either seeing a mirage or they're parroting the punch stat numbers. If Garcia landed those supposed harder punches, I don't think each guy looks the way they did physically or fought in the manner they did. And I think Herrera showed once again how undervalued he was. I didn't pick him to win, but I thought he'd give a good, solid, representative performance. And if you look at Herrera now, Gabe, in his 3 real step-up fights, he beat Ruslan Provodnikov, was neck and neck with Mike Alvarado, and may have been really, and I won't say robbed, but given the short end of the stick on a very questionable decision against Danny Garcia. I think this says a lot about Mauricio Herrera. I don't think it's just all about what Danny Garcia could not do.
No, I knew it was a troubling style, and he's not a guy that's showing like, oh, he's at the end of it. And he's a guy that doesn't have a fastball, you know, like a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. What he does have is everything else. And he knows how to do a changeup, throw a slider at you, a little off-speed action, and really keep you guessing. He's got his own rhythm, and guys like that are just hard to deal with. But I thought Garcia showed an intelligence, a maturity in this fight, in that he was in a bit of a crisis situation. I think he was physically sapped from the weight process. And with a guy like this, you can't just start wildly going after him and just make it a brawl. And the rounds were tight. You know, there's just not even really much of a case for a draw with him. I just didn't have him winning the fight. But I don't think it was a matter of him getting exposed there's definitely a robbery when the wrong guy, you know, loses. But to me, it didn't speak that Danny Garcia was any less than I thought he was. It was a tough style, and I think he would be a tough style every time out. But if they rematched and say they did 47, I think Danny would look better, and I would give him a much better chance to win the next time around.
Gabe, another issue of this fight that became a foreshadowing is open scoring. To me, open scoring is the new Coke of boxing. It's a great idea in theory, and then when you get it, you want to get the hell away from it. And I thought it was interesting. After the first 4 rounds, where I thought Garcia may have won the first, rounds 2, 3, and 4, I think you could make a strong argument that Mauricio Herrera swept those rounds, or at least 2 of them. But after 4 rounds, it was announced over the intercom and by the Showtime broadcasters, it was 38-38, and 2 judges had Garcia winning 40-36, and 3 rounds to 1 at 39-37. I'll say this for open scoring in this particular instance. I think it gave us a foreshadowing of what was to come, because if he's down on 2 of the 3 scorecards, pretty big, based on the way he fought on the first third of that fight, Gabe, it let you know right there he was not taking that title back to Riverside, California.
Well, see, I think this is the thing with open scoring. I mean, yeah, you get those other times where guys go into the four-corner offense, but it's for these times. It is most important. The writers should take note. I'm writing about it in my column tonight. These are the guys that, you know, you almost wish you could send Don Rickles from Casino out there, you know, when he's catching the cheating guy trying to leave, having his money. That's a lot of money he got there. You know, why don't you come with me? We'll, send a little champagne, something nice, and just escort that judge away and have a straight guy take it over, because obviously that guy's seeing a different fight, and you want to know why. I thought, too, that, you know, the broadcast brought up, well, you know, Danny Garcia's being the Puerto Rican advantage. You know, it is in Puerto Rico. You know, he is from Philly. This was trying to break him into this market, and the Puerto Rican judge had it a draw. Now, you know, maybe it was that kind of a fight, alive. I mean, it was a tough fight. I mean, there was a right hand, I think, around the 8th or the 9th that Mauricio Herrera landed. You could see it his better on the initial camera shot. And all the announcers were like, oh, big right hand. But if you watch it on the replay, Garcia is actually landing one underneath that seems to shake Herrera and hurt him. And two, they score the blood. When Danny's nose kind of busts open off of 1-2 and he goes to the ropes late in the fight, But look at the next, like, 30, 40 seconds. Danny backs up Herrera, starts coming underneath with body shots and backing him off. Not everything lands, but some things get through, and it staves off the attack. And he's on the attack after that. They're scoring the blood a bit. It was one of those fights, and it was one of those nights, I think, for Danny Garcia, where you kind of just stay workmanlike. I think he didn't take any chances, and he stayed within himself. He should have stayed with the jab more, which is what Herrera did, and it would open things up. Instead, the fight was what it was. I feel bad for Herrera, but I think networks maybe should, you know, why not do the Provodnikov fight? It makes him viable, but, you know, also dangerous. But that's an interesting fight at 40. That could happen, and that he deserves, in a sense. And it's a right that he should wrong, and Provodnikov, he needs a good win. I'd rather see that than DeMarco, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Heavyweights were in action, and Deontay Wilder now, Gabe, 31 opponents, 31 wins, 31 knockouts, and blowing out Malik Scott, who many people, including me, thought had a shot to at least extend him, at least take him into the ocean, at least make him swim a little bit, and instead, people are accusing him of diving like Greg Louganis. I'm going to say this right now, knowing Malik Scott, knowing the situation, I don't think there's any question that the left hook, it was not the right hand, the left hook hit him on the temple, and that's what visibly affected him. I don't think there was a dive. I'm sorry, maybe I'm being naive. However, with that being said, are we still left with the same questions as it relates to Deontay Wilder?
Yes, he hasn't been tested yet, and that's, you know, that's not his fault. He can only do, he can only fight who they put in front of him at this point. He wants to go full sprint, and they're still like, you know, this was supposed to be a step up, but he's 6'7", what, 250? He's gigantic, and he's a physical problem for people until he meets that guy, and I didn't see him this weekend that can probably take his shots and move around. And make him, you know, make him pay for that, get through his body, upset him, rough him up a bit. Until he meets that guy, we won't find out the depth of him. We know, you know, that he has, I mean, were those the only punches that he landed in the fight? It was like 1-2, and it was over. And it wasn't even, it seemed like more of a slap left hook, but it was perfectly placed on the temple, and it just completely, as my brother Tom would say, discombobulated poor Malik Scott. And he didn't really recover. He couldn't even really get the ropes. I don't see what people were saying about fix. It wasn't like he got up and started arguing. It was just he fought his fight, and Deontay landed a couple shots, and it was over. But he needs to get punched in the mouth by somebody. I just don't know who that somebody is.
Well, we've seen it before with Harold Conyers. I remember being there when a journeyman basically had him out, and then he was saved by the bell. And this was about 3-4 years ago. I think it's clear, though, with Deontay Wilder, you're going to have to smother him. Because if you try to box and work the perimeter of the ring and you let him unfurl those arms, I think you're asking for what Malik Scott. I mean, Malik Scott, in theory, was trying to box, but I guess he was wrong and I was wrong and Joe Guzan was wrong. You better go to the flame and not away from it, because if you give him space to breathe and to, like, again, extend those long, powerful punches of his, he is a very tough guy. Again, I think Deontay Wilder still has some holes in his swing, as they say in baseball, but he has an eraser. I mean, punchers are born. They are not made. And for whatever flaws he might have technically, Gabe, I don't think there's any doubt. And again, I know this has been a lot about matchmaking and soft opposition. I think it's pretty evident he does have God-given natural power.
I mean, he's scary, dude. He's scary. I mean, if he can get used to, you know, Scanyers, as I recall, it was an uppercut, wasn't it, that got it going?
Mm-hmm.
And he had some size to him. He kind of closed the distance, and he came up underneath and went over the top and just, you know, had Deontay on Queer Street. But that was also a guy that was probably in his 20th fight, maybe, you know, in terms of overall fights. He doesn't have a long amateur career. So he's still getting used to it. Can he, to me, one-round fights that are one way, you can't learn anything, you know?
Yeah.
What do those really teach you? Maybe the training camps are so good that that's where he's doing the learning. I don't know. Derek Chisora, after, you know, he goes after Tyson Fury again, who do you match him with next?
That's a good question. I mean, he's openly saying at the press conference in Puerto Rico, I want the winner of Chris Areola, Bermaine Stiverne, who are going to fight May 10th. You know what? That's an interesting fight, because one thing about both guys, and specifically as it relates to Areola, win, lose, or draw, Areola has been relatively durable. And you know Areola is not going to try to box and try to be Picklin Thomas out there or Jimmy Young. He's going to try to go out there and get right into the chest of them. So it's somewhat interesting about Deontay Wilder. For as many questions and as many suspicions as we still have, a performance like that does leave you intrigued. Color me intrigued. I'm not sold. I'm not buying stock on him. Certainly not crowning him. But I'm certainly intrigued. Gabe, what a second round for Juanma Lopez and Daniel Ponce de Leon. Ponce de Leon scores an early knockdown, and it looks like for all intents and purposes, he's going to gain revenge. He's just going to steadily beat him down. But, Gabe, there is an old saying from veteran trainers. Don't ever walk to a puncher. And I thought Ponce de Leon, I thought he showed a very low boxing IQ. You have to understand one thing about Ponce. His chin is now getting worn down. He's hit the floor a lot. But as it relates to Juanma Lopez, his reflexes aren't there. He doesn't look good when he takes a shot. His legs are fading. But what's the last thing a fighter loses? The ability to punch. And he ran right into a right hook. And basically Juanma, in my opinion, gets a stay of execution as it relates to his career.
He just forgot to duck, you know. He got a little excited. He got in there, and he started to trade and try to finish. And, you know, sometimes when you put a guy down, especially the way he put Lopez down, it wasn't – he battered him. His gloves touched canvas. He didn't put him down. And he just got in a hurry, and he got out of position. And, you know, when you know you can put a guy down, just sometimes you have to just take your time, slow down, set it up, go to the body first, come back up the head, and just finish him off. And he just got himself in an exchange, like you said, with a puncher. And what a shot, though, man. That was like punch of the weekend, knockdown of the weekend. I mean, he hit the canvas, looked like he got electrified immediately. I just felt so bad for Ponce, though. It was right there in his grasp, and he just got careless.
Mm-hmm. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, let us know, what was your score as it relates to Garcia Herrera? But before we get to the phone lines, everyone is asking on Twitter, what do we know about this ongoing rift between Oscar De La Hoya and Richard Schaefer? All I can tell you is this. From everything I've been told and all the intel that I've received, there's no doubt that there is absolutely some problems between the two. If this was a marriage, at the very least, they are sleeping in separate beds, if not a trial separation. Gabe, I didn't get to see it last week since I was at the fight. Did you notice at the Angulo-Canelo fight that not only were Oscar and Richard separated by Leonard Ellerbe, of all people, I don't know if that's symbolic or not, but they were a couple feet apart, but they might as well have been 50 miles apart. They didn't even look in each other's directions, much less talk. I thought that body language was very, very telling between the two.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it, that there's just something there. I mean, anybody you talk to, that's all anybody really wants to whisper about. Putting it in conjunction with all the Al Haymon signings,
yes,
it makes you start to wonder, what is that about? And what are they being told? You know, it was interesting when I talked to the Khan camp beforehand. I said, you know, was that part of any of the conversations that you had when you were first discussing the Floyd fight, was signing with Al Haymon? And they said no. But at the same time, I got the sense that they were like, you know, if you asked me, I would say yes. You know, they didn't say as much, but, you know, everybody seems to acknowledge that Al's the guy to be with. So here we are with bang, 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 all these signings that happen. The Petersons, Amir Khan, Robert Guerrero. Is Oscar going to get quiet and just go along with the program? What's going to happen? Will this all get dropped, do you think? Or is he going to proceed and be like, look, no, I don't want this guy running my company and doing really well with it? How well are they doing? That's a good question.
Gabe, one of the theories that's being thrown out there is that with Al Haymon, who I tweeted earlier, is getting more signatures than the Declaration of Independence recently, and he might be on the verge of signing Robert Guerrero. Now, as we talk about this at 4:18 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, that is not finalized from what I've been told, but it could certainly happen, is that he is lining himself up to basically have his own company, and then perhaps Richard Schaefer runs some sort of company that is a combination of Mayweather, TMT, and Haymon. Now, Haymon in the past has always dealt with the A side, but as you mentioned, he's signing everybody now, even retreads or guys have had better days like Chad Dawson, and not just Lamont Peterson, also Anthony Peterson. So I don't think there's any doubt that what Haymon is doing, which is doing a clean sweep of all of boxing, and I don't want to say creating a monopoly, but certainly at least Walmarting his business now, something is in the works there. And I just thought it was very strange that neither Schaefer or De La Hoya were at the fight in Puerto Rico. And if you look at De La Hoya's Twitter feed, not only is his avatar now a Golden Boy logo, which his silhouette is actually the logo, now he's praising a top rank in HBO. HBO last year basically threw his company off the network publicly. And Bob Arum, he says in interviews on Boxing Scene to Louis Sandoval, "I love that guy." Really? Some of those things just make you go, as Arsenio Hall once said, All right, but anyway, let's get to the calls. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next here?
787, you're live on the next round.
Guys, I have to be the first one today.
Javier, how are you?
First of all, you guys were talking about Juanma Ponce. I have to admit, I thought he was going to get knocked out. And I cover a lot of fights. I never hear a roar like when Juanma hit Ponce and Ponce went down. But I wanted your thoughts on the stoppage. There have been some thoughts that it was a little bit too quick. I thought it was okay. I counted five unanswered punches, and he only threw the punch after Pavon was in front of him, but I wanted your thoughts. And regarding Garcia, we were told on Wednesday that he has to stop the workout, the open workout, because of how dehydrated he was.
Hmm.
And he went at 155 the way he went up to the ring. So that was 15 pounds. I remember thinking to myself, who the hell does he think he is, Salido? So it was surprising that he was at 155 during the fight.
Javier, I was told by another Puerto Rican journalist who covered that whole event the same thing you just said, that basically Danny Garcia almost fainted at an open workout. So that is certainly an indication that he had problems with the scales. And as for the stoppage, Gabe, people kept saying that Ponce was blocking these punches. Gabe, he was, with his face. I don't really have a problem with the stoppage.
The replay showed he was kind of blocking the shots with his arms and everything, but there was no – somewhere getting through, it seemed to me, he was on bad legs. I mean, that was they could have waved it off when he initially landed. And then, you know, he just went down because he was still so hurt. His legs went out from under him, and then the third one was a legit knockdown. I just think, you know, you get the guy out of there at that point. I mean, he's just not recovering, and there's still time left. Why see him get iced? You know, he's an older fighter. He's got a lot of miles on him. He's been stopped before. I think if we trend towards too soon, I'm good this year.
Two more things, guys. Golden Boy said about 2 weeks ago that they were contemplating having Lucas Matisse and Keith Thurman in the card April 26th, but we are almost at the end of March and they have not announced a fight. And also, what happened with Fonfora Stevenson, and what's the latest on Prodonikov opponent?
All right, with Provodnikov, again, this thing's kind of turned into a mess here. Arnie Palullo is not going to go with HBO's suggestion, and I put quotes on that, of the winner of Delorme Mayfield getting that fight June 14th with Provodnikov. And it looks like Antonio DeMarco might be the guy. Personally, I don't know about you, Gabe, I think that fight is a physical mismatch.
Yeah, it's totally a physical mismatch. It's an ugly fight. I know Herrera wouldn't be ready in time for what Provodnikov wants to do. That fight just seems unfair to me from the get-go. You have a guy that can fight at 47 effectively and take a guy, an elite like Tim Bradley, the limit, arguably beat him. What's he going to do to DeMarco, man? He's really just a 35.
And Javier, as it relates to Lucas Matisse, I mean, there were reports today that he was going to fight May 3rd against Fidel Maldonado. I'm being told that fight is not finalized. That's been talked about, and I even got an email from a very good source who said, Steve, he may not even end up May 3rd. And you're right, Javier. I don't know what is going on. They just finalized April 19th. It's going to be a triple header with guys like Peter Quillen, Sean Porter facing Malignaggi, and Bernard Hopkins against Bibet Shumanov. But as for April 26th, there's a lot of conjecture, but we don't have any opponents, and we don't have a venue. So, again, this is what happens, though, when you basically get all your talent from one pool. Certain log jams could happen. And just like you, Javier, I'm waiting on some answers as it relates to that date.
Do you think that the Oscar riff with Richard may have something to do with it?
You know, I don't know if those are related. I think some of the stuff that's going on is alarming to the investors. I'm hearing that the major investor, like Gabriel Brenner out of Mexico, he wants to know where his dividends are. And he wants to know, is this Oscar's company? Are we running it on behalf of Oscar De La Hoya? Or are we running it on behalf of the HBO, the Heyman Boxing Organization? So, but I don't know if April 26th is a specific offshoot of some of the problems. I don't think so. I think this is more about the all-around big picture as it relates to the direction of the company.
It was pretty funny that we had Terry Gomez and he said we had no comment.
Well, that's not exactly a denial, is it?
That's what he said. And last, what about Stevenson from Ford? Are they going to fight or
Gabe, I'm getting the sense, you know where this fight is going? Bolivian. I think as soon as Al Heyman got into the picture, that I don't think there's any doubt, they're willing to fight Fonfara. It's the other half of the deal where they may be obligated to fight Sergey Kovalev if he beats Agnew, which I think all of us are expecting. I think that's the problem. And I've been told they've been having deadlines for about the past month. It's like, okay, this week we're going to get a deal done. Then it becomes, all right, the day after next week, then 2 weeks from now. And then last week there were deadlines, and they passed every deadline. So I don't know. If you just read the tea leaves, it seems to me that I don't think Stevenson and his representatives are necessarily keen on the fight after Fonfara, and I think that's the big problem.
Thank you, guys. So,
all right, Javier, thank you very much. Gabe, here's a Twitter question from our good friend Joshua. GGG Chavez and Mikey Garcia, what are their next fights? Can you give us an update? Also, Provo Rios. Josh, until Rios can make 140 and his own people don't believe it, I don't know why we keep bringing it up, except I will say this, Gabe. If you're Provodnikov and his manager Vadim Kornilov and Artie Palullo, do you tell Brandon Rios, do you call his bluff and say, okay, if you want to do the fight and you say you can make 140, we're going to make a deal, and for every pound over 140, you got to give us $100,000 out of your purse?
Yeah, I'd make that deal in a heartbeat. If you want it, come and get it. I think that's a great fight. I think it's a fight that should be encouraged. I imagine both sides are, but it comes down to Brandon. And you can't, you know, if you've missed weight a couple times, you don't get to complain and act like it's our fault, like we're against you somehow. You didn't make weight. And, you know, talk to your camp about it. But the system isn't against these guys. There was a video that came out on a website I don't like to plug, and they were just kind of complaining about it. And it's like, well, look, dude, you missed weight. So you don't get to complain, especially twice.
And as for Golovkin-Chavez, I'm hearing that Tom Loeffler and Bob Arum, they're in constant discussions, and they feel pretty confident on July 12th at the Forum. But again, there's also rumors that Chavez is looking towards Al Heyman, of all people, and I'll let you conclude the rest. As for Mikey Garcia, Gabe, it's interesting. He went from perhaps fighting Yuri Gamboa and then getting backed up to June 21st to maybe nothing. And HBO's taking a hard line this year, and I don't know why. Maybe it's a decreased budget. But these guys nowadays, if they don't take the fights HBO wants, it seems to me they're just pulling the plug on guys and saying, get to the back of the line.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation with that. I mean, with having an Al involved with Chavez Jr., what's that going to look like? Will he be able to go back and forth between the networks? Is that a stopgap? Do you think it's a successful – would it be a successful one for in the case of losing Canelo to – Oscar De La Hoya Promotions, you know, if they remain Golden Boy and Heyman goes on his own. To me, still, the biggest question in all this is, will Al be able to go on his own? And does Oscar really want that? Those are two things. I mean, I don't really have the answers to it, but what would it look like? And could Al actually have his own company? Would it just be a guy that manages a bunch of fighters and he just jobs them out? It seems like he likes more control than that.
And, Gabe, another issue is as it relates to Richard Schaefer, Heyman, or Mayweather, I'm told no one has a promotional license as we speak right now. So just keep that in mind. Here's one from David Lee out of the UK. I think you can answer this better than I can, Gabe. Thoughts on the rumored Amir Khan-Louis Collazo match? I think it's an interesting fight, Gabe.
You know, I've heard that that's the fight that's on the table for them right now. I don't know if Khan's side really wants it, but Again, that climate over at Golden Boy, you look at the kind of short notice that they get with, like, Porter Malignaggi getting announced, like, 4 weeks out, pretty much. These guys just all have to be ready now. It's like a UFC system. We just match you with whoever. And I don't think Khan is going to get a chance to say no to this one. And I think it's a tough fight, but I don't think anybody's getting any passes over at Golden Boy anymore, you know, Golden Showtime, whatever you want to call it. So I would say that fight, 85% chance will happen.
Here's one from Mike M. Is Thomas Adamek, who lost this weekend to Jar Glasgow by the scores of 117-110, 117-111, and 116-112, is he a Hall of Famer, or did he blow it by jumping to heavyweight instead of reigning at cruiser? Gabe, I think he makes a strong case. At 175, he was a very good champion. He lost to a very good young fighter in Chad Dawson. At cruiserweight, I thought he made a very strong case for being the champion. And then my relative comparison, I think he had a pretty good and lucrative heavyweight run, but I get the sense he'll fall just short of the Hall of Fame if you care about that stuff.
I don't, but I'm going to the induction ceremony, so I care a little bit, but it's Tito. And Oscar. I'm on Team Oscar, just in case anybody's asking. I think, you know, can you be a Hall of Famer for being a franchise?
Arturo Gatti,
you know, that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of what he's been. He's been a, you know, a blood and guts warrior, legitimate title holder, arguably legitimate champ, gave us some great fights, some great memories, and sold a lot of tickets in the process, locally, provided, you know, when we kind of needed it most, kind of a, you know, a neighborhood attraction or a local attraction that you could point to and say, you know, that's how boxing should be done, boxing promotion and the fights themselves. He's not in a lot of stinkers. I haven't really had any complaints about him. I don't know if that's Hall of Fame stuff, but, you know, I don't know. Do you care about that kind of stuff?
To a certain degree, but I will say this about Adamek. In the present, he looked like an old guy, and I thought for the past year or so he lost his fastball, a good foot off his fastball. I think this signaled the end of him as a real relevant world-class heavyweight. And finally, one last tweet before we go back to the calls. Jorge Casillas with a statement on the Garcia-Herrera fight. Judging criteria, clean punching, ring generalship, effective aggressiveness, and defense. I don't see how Danny Garcia won in any of those. Mr. Casillas, agreed. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 210, we're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
Good. How
you doing?
This
is Will. How you guys doing?
Will, give us your scorecard for Garcia Herrera.
Okay, I scored it 7-5 for Garcia. For Herrera. But that was, I gave the benefit of the doubt to Garcia, you know, being that I knew that fight was in Puerto Rico. And, I think worst case it could have been a draw, but, I mean, I don't think you could make any case that Garcia won that fight.
You know, I'll say this. Garcia had a very, very bad night, but I think he fought well enough in certain rounds that, and this is one of the things that I hate, Gabe, one of the cliches that I hate, and unfortunately people subscribe to it. You have to really beat the champion to get the title. Gabe, in any other sport, if you're the Miami Heat, you start off at 0-0. Now, they may get, like, favoritism in terms of the referee, but, Gabe, the last time I checked, when two fighters step into the ring, I don't care who the champion is, I don't care who the challenger is, I don't care who the money guy is. You judge a fight, A versus B, and whoever wins those 3 minutes, that you should get 10 points on your scorecard. Unfortunately, I think Herrera lost in large part because of that old cliche.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to sometimes, you know, who they're staring at. But again, you know, people would say the Puerto Rican bias. You know, the Puerto Rican judge had it a draw. But to me, it's more about you had promotional advantage. That's who everybody wanted. That's who they wanted you to be staring at, was Danny Garcia. And so I guess in those first four rounds, the judges were staring at, you know, the bigger shot that Garcia was trying to land or landing to the body and not paying attention to a jab. And it, you know, watching the NBC broadcast, B.J. Penn talked about it. I think it was in the Glasgow fight. He said, you know, I count a big shot more than I count, like, four jabs. You know, guys land four jabs, and the guy comes back with a big shot. I'm going to count that. And I kind of tend to agree with that, but I didn't see enough of big shots coming from Danny Garcia to negate all the jabs and all the ring generalship and the nice things that Herrera was doing in the fight.
Well, Gabe, Gabe, let me just, on that point, I think it's B.J. Flores, by the way, not B.J. Penn. We got our sports mixed up. But
sorry, my bad.
I'm sick of people saying, well, the punch stats tell me who landed or threw the bigger power shots. First of all, I don't think it's possible to accurately tabulate, number one, the quality of shots or the quantity. I mean, the human eye, to me, can't necessarily do all that. Now, if you do a slow-motion replay round by round after the fight, those are numbers I would believe. And, again, I'm watching this fight again. I've seen it a few times. I don't think there are that many clean, hard punches landed by Danny Garcia. I mean, you can huff and puff and threaten to blow the house down. If you don't land, it doesn't mean a damn thing. Will, anything else?
I agree. Yeah, I just want to kind of point out, a lot of times, you know, it's very common, I hate being that way, but when a fighter has a bad performance, they say he's been exposed and so forth. But I think kind of on the flip side, I think I may be wrong, but I kind of feel that we all overrated Garcia following the win over Matisse, because before that, you know, Matisse was heavily favored against him, you know, last year. And, you know, when he beat Matisse, he kind of became the man, and I think that's, you know, it's kind of skewed a lot of the perception of everybody, because I cannot forget the fight where Zab Judah had him in trouble and almost knocked him out in their fight. And, you know, he's had a lot of shaky performances. He's never really looked like a world beater, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I just think he's a solid, exciting guy. But I felt that we kind of overestimated him based on his win over Matisse, who Matisse might have had an off night against him. And, in fact, Matisse is, you know, strangely, he's been talking about retirement and tweeting about that. So do you think, you know, any
take on
that?
There's a reason why you fight the fights. Most people thought Matisse, including myself, was going to run right through Garcia. And then conversely, a lot of people thought Herrera was nothing more than a stay-busy fight that would be a routine victory for Danny Garcia. And once again, the fight played out much different on the canvas than it did on paper. But I kind of agree with your point, Will, when I hear that Richard Schaefer is out there railing against Ring Magazine because they don't have Danny Garcia pound for pound number two or three. And I'm thinking to myself, in what universe right now is Danny Garcia really a top five elite pound-for-pound fighter? Even if you care about that stuff, I think he probably is somewhere in the top 20s. But I'm thinking to myself, is he really in the category of Floyd Mayweather, Andre Ward, Tim Bradley? I found that to be like promoter speak to the 10th degree.
I think he's getting into a place where he's developing a resume. You know, they're so in a hurry to make these guys champions. Nobody's really ever a true contender anymore. I look at him like in the old days he'd be a nice contender right now that's a little bit vulnerable, but he's fought himself through some things, you know. The Herrera fight, it's a tough one. You know, Herrera's got a funky style. He's got a win over Provodnikov that arguably, you know, isn't a win, and it's because he's got a hard-to-judge, herky-jerky style. But Garcia, to me, has always followed a bit of a pattern of looking bad and then looking good. And kind of going back and forth like that. Like the Nate Campbell fight, I thought he was getting kind of touched up a little more by a guy that he shouldn't have, but he was getting touched up, and it shouldn't have happened. Kendall Holt fight, I thought he looked nice. The first Morales fight, I thought he looked, he could look better. Didn't finish well to me. I mean, he did put down Morales, but he looked funky to me. But then he comes back and he knocks out Amir Khan after dealing with that speed, then takes out Morales fast. And the Judah fight, I thought, Judah does punch. I mean, that's what he's known for. He's a sneaky veteran who's any given night could beat you. And he won that fight, ultimately, Garcia, pretty handily. And then the Matisse fight, I agree with you. I think people rated Matisse too high. So, to me, beating him doesn't make you the man. I think I picked Garcia to win that fight and win it the way he did. And I think it's just the fact that Matisse is speaking about retirement, maybe that speaks to the best to what Danny Garcia did to him. Herrera was never going to make him look good. I thought it was bad matchmaking. If the goal was to have a homecoming in Puerto Rico, then you don't match him against Mauricio Herrera, who is a solid fighter. I think it just comes down to that. Styles make fights, and in this case, you know, sometimes they don't. You know, make wins for you. That's what the whole goal was. I think Goldenboy screwed up on this one.
Mm-hmm. Will, anything else?
That's all I have, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Again, if you want to call in, a phone line has just opened up. Our number is 347-215-7598. Gabe, last week the precincts have reported The Saul Alvarez Alfred Angulo pay-per-view on March 8th at the MGM Grand did 350,000 pay-per-views. I was told if it did 300 or above that it would be considered a success. These numbers, I think at that point, his appearances on Showtime, I think, will be few and far between now, Gabe.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, but it's also, it signals that things are healthy in boxing. People are willing to see that guy. It was a solid performance. It just makes it everything much more, it all relates back to this golden feud that's going on. It makes him a much more intriguing piece to have for Oscar De La Hoya. It makes it harder to make it, you know, a tougher decision, I think, for all to make, splitting things up, because Canelo is now a pay-per-view franchise, and those are rare. There's not many people that'll be that. And I don't even – you look at, you know, is Deontay Wilder on his way to becoming a pay-per-view guy? I don't think so. I don't even know if you could sustain that in the heavyweight division. There's not enough people. That's a big piece there. I'm not sure how I feel about it, though. I mean, do you think boxing fans are going to put up with three pay-per-views from Canelo a year and three from Mayweather? Is it going to overall –
well,
golden point?
Let me make this point. I guess the next date that they've squared off is July 26th. And obviously, mm-hmm. they change their minds all the time. They did that with Broner McDonough. But Alvarez is only 23 years old. And throughout the history of boxing with pay-per-view franchises, they didn't become pay-per-view franchises until at least their late 20s or further along down the road. And you still play to the smallest audiences on pay-per-view. It may be the most lucrative platform, but if you're going to go strictly pay-per-view at this stage against the Angulo-like opponent, I think it's hard to expand your reach if you're not on a premium cable outlet at least once a year. And if you look at Oscar De La Hoya, who's been one of the all-time great pay-per-view franchises, even though he was racking up multi-millions of dollars on pay-per-view, Gabe, look at his record. Daryl Coley, Oba Carr, Arturo Gatti, Steve Forbes, those fights were all on HBO, and he was able to extend his reach and build an audience. I think they're going to have to make some decisions here as it relates. And also, it's going to be about the B side. With Angulo, you had a Mexican. Now, for July 26th, you got to find another guy that is a palatable dance partner. Gabe, who's next on deck here on the phone lines?
In the 909, you're live on the next round. 909.
Hey, guys. This is Fernando from Tucson.
Fernando from Tucson. Hey. Fernando, give us your Garcia Herrera scorecard.
I had it around 7-5 for Garcia, but I think the open score may have influenced me because I was listening to it and I was kind of like, that's where they're going. So I was a little watching, but I think I might have been like, it affected my scorecard. I thought Garcia did enough. He just looked a lot bigger than Herrera, and it just looked like he was hitting him hard. Maybe he wasn't, but he just looked so much bigger.
Okay, well, so what can we help you with?
I was wondering, do you guys think that Deontay Wilder looks a little bit he reminds me a lot of Michael Grant when he first came on? You know, like, they're both 6'7", they both look great. I remember seeing Michael Grant, I forget, it was like 25 wins, 25 knockouts, and I just thought he was going to be the next big thing. And then he ran into Galata and barely got past that. Then he got, you know, just stomped by Lennox Lewis. I wonder if they're trying to build him up. I actually think that Malik Scott, I think he threw the fight, actually, but I thought he was just not prepared or something. I just don't think those shots were that hard.
Fernando, I think if you go by height, he's a lot like Michael Grant. But Michael Grant, I remember Larry Merchant saying, wow, that's a beautiful body. Like, you know, like, okay, Larry, that's an interesting comment. But in other words, he looked like a bodybuilder. He looked like something out of Conan the Barbarian. While Wilder, he's well-built, but he's much more lean. And I think he has much more speed on his punches. I think he has the ability to just snap off certain shots with much more flexibility and quickness than Michael Grant ever did.
We need to get him on the Ivan Drago machine and start measuring his punching power. I think it is that good. I think it just comes right down the pipe. You know, it's not like he's wild with his shots anymore. He's learning how to calm down. There wasn't a lot of punches thrown in there. He was just kind of gauging him, seeing what where he needed to be, and then he just executed. I don't know. To me, this is no evidence of a fix. Malik doesn't strike me as that kind of a guy. He didn't seem like he had himself all together. from the shots. I mean, went down pretty hard. So I don't know. And
yeah,
I don't
that,
see
that
what, you know, a guy that is familiar with Wilder, having sparred with him a lot, I don't see how you couldn't, if you're going to fix a fight and you're fixing it with the fighters and you go down, you know, fast, so why wouldn't you fix it to take the guy some rounds, make Wilder's stock go up even further because we could see some dimensions of him and then get knocked out in the fourth after a good fight or the fifth or the sixth. You know what I mean? That would make more sense to me if you're building up an attraction. A 1 minute or 2 minutes doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I thought about that too, but it's I don't, you know, it does make sense that they would go longer. I just, you know, sometimes people do things that don't make sense, and I was just kind of like, I would agree with you, but I haven't seen enough of Wilder because every time I see him, it's over super quick, and I believe in devastating power. Maybe he does have it, but Kovalev does it, who I think has great power, and I see how he does it. It just happens so quickly. I'm still just skeptical. I wish I saw more of him, even if it was in the gym or something. It would help out.
The question for Deontay Wilder is going to be this. When he's in his first real fight where he has to hear rounds 5, 6, and 7, and he has to really swim out in deep waters, as they say, will he have been prepared enough coming in to deal with that? And that is, like Gabe mentioned it before, and Bruce Trampler and other matchmakers have said, that they hate first-round knockouts because it takes away the ability to actually learn on the job. And so the power of Deontay Wilder, or maybe we should say his matchmaking, has been both a blessing and a curse for him.
Yeah, that's probably – I'm just wondering how it's going to happen when you fight someone that can take a punch.
Well, Fernando, listen, thank you for the call, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, if you want to call in again, there's a phone line open, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on here?
In the 714, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Bobby from Anaheim.
Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hey, I just had a quick question on the topic of the heavyweights. This question is more for Gabe because I know he's a little more familiar. Anthony Joshua, after you look at his last fight on the topic of Deontay Wilder, do you guys see that as a big fight down the line? And that's, of course, if Deontay Wilder stays undefeated or so it looks good that further down the line, but I also want to see who do you guys think is in line for next opponents in regards to Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua, and who do you guys want to – how do you see – for Gabe, how do you see them moving along, Anthony Joshua?
I think they're moving along just fine. You know, I'm not quite sure. I think he's still in the hand-picked, you know, garden variety guys that he's going to put down after a few rounds. But I can't tell yet. I really like everything he brings. He has great balance. He knows who he is, and the combinations are nice. Solid jab. You look at him, and I worry: is he Frank Bruno? Is this so ripped and everything? Is he going to be rigid when he gets hit? Is he going to be able to roll with it? I have the same questions about him that I do about Deontay, except I kind of believe in him more as a pure boxer, and that he's going to be able to deal with adversity and be able to deal with it sooner and not so panicky way. The way I watched Wilder when he got hurt, and he was just all over the place. I just don't. I tend to, if I was going to buy stock in one guy or the other, I might buy it in Anthony Joshua. I think that's probably where I would lean.
The one question we have to figure out about Anthony Joshua, like we do with a lot of young fighters, whether they're Olympic gold medalists or just run-of-the-mill amateurs, can they catch? I know one thing about Joshua. He could certainly punch. He certainly looks the part of a 21st century heavyweight. But the first time he gets drilled on the beard, I want to see how he reacts. Now, if he can stand up and he has above-average punch resistance, I think we have something. But let's see. And let's put it this way. The managers and the promoters involved with Joshua don't want us to find out for at least another year or two. That's just the way the fighters are developed nowadays.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
He's fighting TBA, you know, April 19th. I mean, that's kind of the territory he's in, is a little bit of the last second guy. Hopefully they match him well enough to get him out of the second round. But, you know, yeah, he's only 5-0. So at this point, he's just, you know, not nice and easy with him. But he strikes me as further along than Deontay Wilder. But, you know, at the same time, it's hard to know what you're looking at when they're in that development stage. All you can almost look at is their physical attributes, maybe how they react, how they finish, how poised they are. But like Steve says, until you get that professional resistance, we won't know.
And as for Deontay Wilder, who he should fight next, in a perfect world, Gabe, the winner of the Tyson Fury-Chisora fight, I would love to see that guy face Wilder, because one thing about Fury, that he's a big guy with a lot of confidence, and Chisora is just a Sherman tank. I think both guys bring some interesting questions to the table for Deontay Wilder.
I'd love that fight. Either combination. I really like Chisora. I think he just kind of brings it. He's going to be on your chest. He's the kind of guy that is experienced with dealing with bigger people, and he's working on his conditioning and caring about it. They kind of it's like the focus of each promotion. He brings up how good a shape he is, and that he can just bring the heat over and over each round. So to me, I would lean towards that fight more. But Tyson Fury, at some point we got to find out if he's the real deal too. And I'd like to see him. He's a big guy. I want to see Deontay have to deal with a giant guy who's got a jab too. So bring it on. Either one.
All right. Thanks, guys. And just one follow up question. How do you see? So you look at Klitschko, and I'm sure that Vitaly has his hands full with the Ukraine situation right now. But when you look at Vladimir. And you look at him holding on to those belts. Let's say he does retire in the next, let's say within the next 5 years. I'm just curious, how do they go about maneuvering all these heavyweight prospects around the Klitschkos until they retire? And then when that does happen, do you guys think that it's just going to be a scenario where once a heavyweight emerges in the post-Klitschko era that Vladimir just decides he wants to come back and challenge that person and then we're back in the situation we're in now?
My gut feel is once Vladimir retires, he's retired. I don't think he's doing Brett Favre here. I think any smart manager, and I've talked to a few, they're not managing right now to run into Klitschko. They're timing this out so they don't have to face Klitschko, because I think they realize even in this advanced age or state that he's in, he's still an incredibly tough matchup. He's big, he's strong, he could punch. And he's like an octopus with the way he could just grapple you. So I don't think any of the real prospects, especially like an Anthony Joshua, I think he's at least 3-4 years away. I don't think Klitschko will ever be in his future, realistically.
Okay, thanks for the time, guys. I appreciate it.
Again, if you want to call in, phone line just opened up, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
559, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Steve from Fresno, long-time listener. How you guys doing?
Steve, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, two questions for you. Any news on the Cotto Martinez undercard? Is there anything they can do to make me pay $50 for that?
Here's the situation, and for once, if there's a really bad undercard, you don't blame Bob Arum. The deal that was worked out is that Cotto Promotions will get the semi-main slot, Samson Lekowitz will get a slot, and Lou DiBella will get a slot. And I'm hearing certain names like Marvin Sansana, maybe Matthew Macklin, Jorge Melendez, who's the junior middleweight that fights this week on Telefuture, or Unamath. If he wins, he will be on that show. So if you're asking me, is there a Lucas Matisse, Danny Garcia fight on that undercard? I would say no, there isn't.
Great. The second question, to jump on this Wilder bandwagon, assuming that he has to take a couple more filler fights, because he's probably not ready right now to jump that 12 rounds, who's this generation's Ross Purity, Bigfoot Martin? Now, he's going to go at least 5 or 6 rounds of this guy.
Gabe, Derek Chisora, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely, the place that you got to go. I mean, I think, it's interesting watching everybody kind of maneuver around it and not want to deal with the Klitschko. But, I mean, there's good fights to be made. I mean, Alexander Povetkin, that would be a guy I wouldn't mind throwing at Deontay Wilder. I mean, he's a boxer, but you should be able to control that guy from a distance. You're not terribly worried about his power. I don't think, Andy Ruiz is ever going to get in that mix. He's a separate universe. I think it's an awful matchup for Ruiz. What did you think about Glasgow? And that makes him, number two in the IBF at this point.
He is right on the verge, guys. I mean, that fight, like you said, Gabe, was an eliminator. And I think that he is going to become a guy, whether we love his style or not, that there's still something very important about being a heavyweight champion. These belts are still very important. I think Glasgow, I would say, is not spectacular. I'd say he's solid. That's what he is. He's all around and he's solid. You know, he might be a guy that, that if you're the Wilder people, you look at it and you say, you know what? That guy doesn't do anything great, and we have an absolute sledgehammer, and we're a better athlete. But and, but on the flip side, Glasgow says, wait a minute, I'm the guy with the better amateur career. I've been actually hitting real fights. I actually think that would be a pretty interesting matchup.
I like Glasgow. I mean, I like what he showed. I mean, talk about, you know, he got taken out to deep water, but I think probably the last vestiges of greatness of Tomasz Adamek. I mean, that last stand that he went on, the middle of the fight, I thought he was ready to go. His eye was closed. He was beat up. He looked like an old man in the sixth, and he just started a late surge. And, you know, Glasgow just made it to shore and survived drowning. I thought it was a good performance and the kind of fight he's going to need along the way. If he met a Wilder in his next fight, he's been places that Wilder can only dream of. That's an interesting fight. I don't know. The division is fun without the Klitschkos, if you take them out of the mix. Sort of like everybody kind of fighting for that Floyd payday and making that the story. You know, why not just fight for your own legacy and see where the chips end up, you know, where everything leads you, you know?
What does it say about Glasgow, though, that he went life and death with a guy that Wilder just blew on and he fell over?
Well, okay, well, that's what I call the A beats B, B beats C, but A may not beat C. I mean, Muhammad Ali had fits with Ken Norton, who got destroyed by George Foreman, and Ali beat George Foreman. I would not just go by the comparative results of a fight and draw conclusions on that, because, again, there's a lot of variables as it relates to stylistic matchups in the sport of boxing.
It's like saying in the Dustin Poirier fight. Oh, not a problem. It's like saying in that fight, well, you know, Matisse wins if his eye doesn't get messed up. Well, yeah. I mean, if he knocks down Garcia a couple times, yeah, he wins. He knocks him out, he totally wins, you know. The things go the way they are.
Well, speaking of that, Jimmy and Leah, our good friends from Arizona, says, are we seeing the return of the machine on the undercard of May 3rd? Absolutely, positively, maybe. I mean, honestly, as it relates to April 26th and that undercard for Mayweather, Chino, Maidana, I don't think anyone knows all that much. I'm hearing that Adrian Broner may be fighting Carlos Molina, not the 54-pounder, but the chubby little lightweight from out here in L.A. Jay Leon Love, I'm hearing, might even be on the card. So there's a lot of things that need to be settled. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 707, you're live on the next round. 707?
They're having a conversation. Let's go to the next caller, Gabe.
In the 931, you're live on the next round. 931.
Hey, keep calm, guys. Keep calm and sing Rocky Top. How you guys doing?
Well, is this from the Tennessee state? Is this from the volunteer state that we're talking
from? Yes, it is. It's Eduardo. How you doing?
Eduardo. Eduardo, how did you have the Garcia Herrera fight scored?
7-5. I see no controversy, period.
Who'd you have winning?
Garcia.
Really?
No,
okay.
No,
so what can we help you with?
Oh, yeah. What about Lara Canelo? What do you guys think about that? Is this still fantasy talk, or are we getting a little closer? Honestly, I'm really excited about this.
I haven't heard, you know, anything about it, you know, as far as, you know, if it's actually going to happen. I mean, I think when you do 350 pay-per-views, you know, the 350,000 pay-per-views with Angulo, who some people just assumed was going to lose, and then he did, it's not like he's in the same position that Mayweather was where after Guerrero, where you're like, you really got to push this dangerous fight because the fans are just not going to buy it. If your goal is 350 and you can do it with Angulo, you probably can do it with somebody other than Arislandi Lara. He's 23 years old, and they're going to be protecting that franchise. So I just don't expect that fight. They talked about Carlos Molina is a name that I'd heard more, but you know he's got issues, so I think maybe that belt gets bumped off, and you may see him fighting for it. Who knows? You know, that's something that you could sell when you put him in against, you know, one of the lower ranked guys that might actually be a good fit for him. Who knows?
Because mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard or read about the exchange at the post fight press conference last week, but Lara gets on the dais, gets on the mic. And he basically appeals to everybody, saying, who wants to see me and Canelo fight? And, like, two people clapped, and then Canelo delivered a verbal KO by saying, that must be your manager. That, to me, suggests that he doesn't really seem to think Lara is next on his dance card.
Yeah, peanuts to an elephant. I was like, who are you, little boy? Who are you? Hey, thanks, guys. You guys are awesome, man.
All right, thanks a lot. Okay, before we hit the calls, we have another half hour left. I want to talk about this just a little bit. The TMZ reports last week on Floyd Mayweather were obviously, I guess he went Nino Brown over guys that supposedly ended up not stealing his jewelry. Now, and then they came up with a second story where they had the x-rays. First of all, I think it's long overdue that Mayweather needs two things, security cameras and a safety deposit box. But with that being said, two things come to mind here, Gabe. Number one, where is the police report? Is this just a extortion or a shakedown attempt at a civil suit where they're going to get a lot of money, maybe get paid more than Marcos Maidana May 3rd? But second of all, with that being said, Gabe, where's the statement of denial from Floyd Mayweather?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I wonder, you know, with people that have access to him, particularly media, certain media outlets, where's the interview about it? Where are the questions about it? I mean,
right.
I want to get on a soapbox about the media and Floyd, but that's generally the treatment. And there's been some serious rumors out there about him before. There's been, you know, the cases about him before. And you never really see the media, our media, descend on him the way, like, straight media would, you know, mainstream media would. So I don't know. To me, if that was out there about me, I mean, do you dignify it with a reply if it's not true at all? Or, you know, do you put out a legal statement? And TMZ doesn't run with things. Generally, you know, their process, their vetting process is better than you would think. Don't judge them by their style. They're a real news agency.
They've had a pretty high batting average as it relates to sports. That's all I'll tell you. And number two, let's just be blunt. Floyd's track record is not exactly pristine. Could I see a scenario where he does something so reckless because he's untouchable? Quite frankly, yes. And, Gabe, if me and you did something like this, I don't think it's nearly the story because we're not the public figures that Floyd Mayweather is. I mean, Floyd Mayweather is the most well-known boxer alongside Manny Pacquiao. You know, Larry Merchant was telling me, he goes, Steve, how come none of you guys are covering this? He said, Steve, if this was LeBron James in any fashion or form, this would be a huge story. And LeBron James and his reps would give at least some sort of comment. I sometimes silence is deafening, Gabe. That's all I'll say. It's like when Robert Morales, a good friend of mine, asked Richard Schaefer to comment on this rift between him and Oscar. He didn't deny it. He just said, I don't want to comment on anything. Sometimes those no comments say a lot. They speak volumes, Gabe.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It's an interesting story. I mean, that story, does that put, you know, May 3rd in jeopardy? What, you know, what's happening?
No.
Why hasn't
there's no way. Gabe, I don't think it does. I mean, we're talking about a jurisdiction that held back the jail sentence of Mayweather a couple of years ago so he could go through with this fight with Miguel Cotto in May. Trust me. Short of assassinating the president, that fight on May 3rd against Marcos Maidana, trust me, it's going to go forward if there's no injury to either Maidana or Mayweather. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 954, Sean, you're live on the next round.
Yo, what's up, guys?
Oh, my God. Let's not talk about the Malik Scott Wilder prediction here, Sean.
I honestly, I wouldn't even bring it up because it was just such a letdown all around for all sides.
Oh, but
you know,
Sean,
what I mean?
Yes or no? Do you think he took a dive, Malik Scott?
I don't know. It's a weird situation.
Okay.
Who knows? But truthfully, I think the key to a good dive is only having one side know about it. Like Gabe, you were saying earlier. That, like, why not have him go a couple rounds? You know, you got to realize, like, I don't think Malik Scott and Deontay Wilder are the most intelligent of people, you know, so it's just easier to have one side, I think, take a dive. With that being said, I mean, who knows? I mean, he looks so – it was kind of, he kind of did the same thing against Chisora, too, so what do you expect?
Mm-hmm. Sean, what were your thoughts on the main event from Puerto Rico?
I don't know. I fell asleep.
What a ringing endorsement of that fight.
No, I didn't, but I turned it off, to be honest. It was – I would have watched Friday night fights if I was looking for that sort of fight, you know what I mean? That's what it reminded
me
of.
You know, Gabe, I actually found that fight to be fascinating. I wasn't bored at all by that fight. I mean, you're making it sound like this was Guillermo Rigondeaux here, Sean.
Wow, wow.
I don't know. It didn't appeal to me. But anyway, don't you feel like the entire picture is coming full circle here with the Cold War, Golden Boy, like Oscar, Richard, Heyman. You see all the signings he's doing. I feel like there's a lot more to the story that's starting to come together here.
Sean, I really believe that this could be the story of the year, because it'll change alliances. It could change, if not necessarily the landscape of the business, it will have an effect in certain ways. I am fascinated by this. I really am, Sean, from a guy that's on the inside that talks to people, trying to gather information. I'm with you, Sean. I think this could bring about some seismic changes in the business.
Absolutely.
I just wonder where Richard Schaefer falls into all this. And to me, that's the most fascinating idea, is that do we get a third promotional company headed up by Richard Schaefer? Has he engendered himself, with the right people in the business, or has he pissed off all the wrong people in this business while he was, using Golden Boy? Or, if that's how it ends up shaking out, will Heyman be able to sustain on his own, or will they just say, look, get rid of Schaefer, and we're good. Oscar wants to be the front man and be the business guy. Who knows? But it's a fascinating situation.
Gabe, do you think any of the investors want Oscar to be in charge of things realistically?
Is that a serious question, Sean?
No, but I think he wants to be the lead figurehead, and Richard has become that. Richard used to just be the business guy. Oscar would do the talking, and more, it's sort of like, again, like Casino reference, when De Niro's like, well, when the boss is away, I'm in charge, and he's away a lot, essentially. So I'm the boss, and I don't think Oscar likes that. I think initially this was a company he wanted to run. He wanted to run it with a smart business guy who wanted to be the backseat, and this was his way of extending his public persona. And he's, I think by his own fault, he's in this position. But regardless, he like Steve said, he's in the silhouette. He is the Golden Boy. So I think Richard could be arguably replaced in this scenario.
Guys, let me make this point. Whoever or whatever happens to Schaefer, let's say he departs the company for whatever he does, they're going to have to hire another Richard Schaefer. And some of this I put on the blame squarely at the shoulders of Oscar. He's been an absentee owner for at least the last 5 years. I mean, as someone that called Richard and Bob Arum and Kathy Duva and Artie Palullo, all the power players in the sport, to get stories, to do some reporting, I've never once had to call Oscar, because half the time he was not in the office. That's on him. But regardless of what happens, they're going to have to get, if Schaefer leaves, they're going to have to get another version of Richard Schaefer to run that company on a day-to-day basis.
No doubt. There's no question of that. I just think, you look at the way that Richard has treated the landscape, the things he says about Bob Arum will never work with them. I mean, he's acts like, he doesn't need anybody in the business. And maybe that's their plan, with Heyman signing up everybody to not need everybody in the business. But Oscar wants to be like Top Rank and actually kind of survive in the world and work with the smaller guys and work together to make big fights and kind of do it the old school way. There needs to be a split here. I think that's what's going to end up happening. My question is, do we need Richard as a promoter? Is he going to go out on his own or just go back to Swiss banking? That should be interesting to see.
Sean, anything else we can help you with?
Yeah, relating to this issue. So do you guys think, is HBO getting a little bit nervous here? It's clear that there's a Heyman power grab going on. He snagged Adonis, who is, I think, obviously one of their up and coming franchises. So,
Adonis Stevenson's interesting, and Gabe always reminds me of this. I keep saying he's a young guy. He's 36, 37 years old. He's closer to the expiration date than I think we all perceive him to be. Do I think HBO is nervous? I don't know if they're nervous. Here's what I think, Gabe. I think they're curious over how this is going to play out. That's my personal perception.
I would agree with that. It's, with him, he's an older dude, and he's been stopped before. I mean, how much stock do you want to put in that, you put him in with another puncher? I mean, there's a reason why you can say whatever he wants nowadays with Al, and we need to make, you know, big money. But there was two interviews, you know, post-fight interviews in a row where they asked him, they mentioned the name Sergey Kovalev, and he went from being a kind of, not arrogant, probably the wrong word, but like a boastful fighter who's smiling about his victory to his literally his vocal tone dropping and kind of looking down and well, you know, and just kind of these half-assed answers because he never wanted to face that guy. There's a reason for that. He's been stopped. So, I don't know. Yeah, how much stock would you put in that? Sort of like putting stock in Adrian Broner, the way he acts offstage. I'm not going to bank my future on that. So, I think Steve's right. Curious would be the way I'd put it. But their future is not all wrapped up in the young prospect, Adonis Stevenson.
Yeah, I've been told that HBO, they're in the Kovalev business, and they've said our Kovalev commitment is not contingent on anyone else, even Adonis Stevenson. Sean, anything else we can do for you?
Speaking of post-fight interviews, how terrible was Deontay's?
Deontay's Deontay. That's all I can say. He's not the poet laureate. Let's just put it that way.
All right, guys.
Sean,
all right, guys,
thanks for the call. Going to a couple of tweets here from my good friend Bakari out there in Jersey. Is Provodnikov entrenched enough at HBO so as to prevent unification against Swift? Would be a great matchup. Well, he is for one fight, Gabe. I know this. Provodnikov has at least one more commitment to HBO. Now, what happens after that, again, let's see how everything plays out because the shifting alliances in boxing, who might be your enemy today, Gabe, may be your friend tomorrow.
Yeah, that's very, you know, I think Artie Palullo is a guy that knows how to, you know, traverse the waters in boxing pretty well. And, you know, that's the thing. I don't think Danny, you know, I was watching an interview today with his dad, and Danny immediately went to, you know, mentioning the weight in the post-fight interview. I think he wants to be at 47. Provodnikov, he got his belt, he got his legitimacy, but they may need to think about the options of moving up. I mean, I know a belt means a lot to a guy like him in terms of getting on the network and just in terms of, you know, he is the champion of that particular sanctioning body in the division. But he's running out of options that are viable, and, you know, it's kind of a bummer to watch a guy that's such an exciting fighter and given us two back-to-back great fights have to look for somebody to entertain us with. All the
Dave,
stuff, you know, the what's that?
He fought in mid-October, and I understand every fight he goes through is a bit of demolition derby. That's Provo style. This is not Willie Pep, okay? But
yeah.
he's slated to come back 7-8 months later, which means at best he'll fight twice this year. To me, and Artie Palullo does not disagree, I said, Artie, shouldn't he have been back in the ring by April? And he said, yeah, but this is where, again, network commitments and being able to get opponents, it can hinder a career at this level. Here's a tweet from Mark. Guys, what are the odds Mikey Garcia fights Uchiyama in Macau next? What do you think of that fight? Should Garcia fight Gamboa? Gabe, I think the Uchiyama fight, in talking to Bob Arum, that's the fight that he wants. For some reason, HBO does not want that fight, and I think it goes back to this old theory that we have. What the hardcore boxing fan wants doesn't necessarily match the interest of the general fan who watches on HBO.
And that's a shame in this case, because this is a really good action fight. That's kind of what I'd want to see. You know, I guess, yeah, I am a hardcore boxing guy, but if you're looking to match Garcia tough, I mean, that's a fun fight. It's a fight that we all want to see. I don't really understand the move by HBO, but it is what it is. You know, Bob's opened up a new market, so maybe that's just a good thing, and we'll have to deal with it. I'm sure we'll end up seeing it, but, you know, on the radio or whatever. But, yeah, I just don't understand why HBO. I mean, have you talked to anybody? Is there a specific reason why they didn't want to fight it like this?
Listen, what they do sometimes is unexplainable. I have a hard time, Mike, thinking Marky Garcia, based on his importance to the company, regardless of what you thought of that last fight, I don't think he's being shipped out to Macau. That's just my personal opinion. And if you want to pay him what he usually gets paid, you need that HBO license fee. And the other part is, should Garcia fight Gamboa? Yes. But I guess they're having problems satisfying both sides. But I, to be completely fair, I know Gamboa is an easy target, but I've been told in this particular instance, it's more of a hindrance, or it was more the fault, if you want to call it that, of Mikey Garcia that this Gamboa fight is not coming to fruition. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
In the 702, July on the next round.
On my hand.
702.
Hello?
Rob.
Hello, is this our good friend Rob from the UK located in the 702?
That's me. I actually live in Los Angeles, but I have a 702 number.
Oh, okay.
For some reason.
Welcome aboard regardless.
Yeah, no worries. I just want to give my thoughts on Garcia this weekend and also Wilder. I mean, Wilder, you couldn't read too much into it, but I was still impressed, and I've kind of been one of his biggest haters throughout the time. I actually, like Steve, predicted that Scott could win, but he's kind of turning the I'm kind of changing my mind on him. I also heard a few stories about some sparring sessions between him and David Haye from back in London, and that kind of sold me on him a bit more. Apparently he can hold his own more than people seem to think. I'm kind of being sold on Wilder now. I think he could go into that Stavern fight, which it will likely be, and get the win there. And we could have a real star on our hands. I'd be interested to see how he would do as a ticket seller in the South as well, because it's been a long time since there's been like a Southern superstar really in boxing.
I would say the last guy would be Evander Holyfield, who actually had some very robust crowds at the Omni, the old home of the Atlanta Hawks back in the 80s.
Yeah, and Garcia just has always struck me as a guy that fights to the level that's in front of him. I scored it 115, 113 to Herrera. I'd like to see Garcia take him on again, but sounds like he's going to move up to 147. An interesting interview I heard, which was from a few weeks back, where Garcia's father was bragging about how daddy's on such a good diet, he's using Weight Watchers. And that kind of made me laugh, because Weight Watchers isn't, you know, okay, you'll lose weight, but it's really not what the sort of top. I know you guys get on strength and conditioning
packs.
It's awful
for you.
Yeah, it's not healthy. It's just processed food. So maybe that's something he needs to look into, or maybe it was just Garcia's dad just not really. I know English isn't his first language. Maybe he was just getting mixed up there. So that'd be interesting to see. But I want to see him take the rematch, do what Mayweather did a few years back and get the win in, because everyone, I mean, people still bring up that Castillo win to this day, but we'll see.
I have to be honest, though, Gabe, even though a lot of people disagree with the decision and, like our caller here, think that Mauricio Herrera deserved to have his hand raised in victory, I have to be honest with you. This fight, from a public standpoint, it doesn't scream rematch, does it?
No, this is where the axiom, win this one, look good in the next one, comes from. You know, and Danny didn't really win this one, but I almost imagined, like, and I think it's really terrible that Herrera doesn't get the win. I mean, no mistake, I do consider it a robbery. He didn't win. I don't think you should blame it on Puerto Rico. That guy had it a draw. You know, blame it on the other guys. The open scoring should be used to be, you know, mark those guys. Hey, what's going on with your scorecard? And really kind of monitor them. And then there should be some sort of referendum after that. But that's all asking boxing to be organized. So, you know, I don't know. It's a fight that, yeah, I wouldn't go back for a rematch. Maybe you do it at 147, like I said, where you get a size advantage and where Herrera is probably not as effective. But that style is always going to be a problem. I mean, that's just who Herrera is. So, again, yeah, it's not. To me, Castillo was Mayweather. One, he was injured in that fight. You have to acknowledge that. And it's Floyd not on his best night, but, you know, his style was made to take on a style like Castillo's and box him from center ring, which he did in the rematch. I wouldn't see that Danny's like, oh, let me flip the switch and go to my A game, and Herrera's not going to be able to deal with me at all. He's always going to be a problem. I wouldn't go near him again, personally.
Rob, anything else we can do for you?
I don't want to see Garcia move up in weight. I mean, if this Weight Watchers stuff is ring true, I want to see him stay at 140, no matter how good this guy
Rob,
is.
Rob, I got to be honest with you. I don't buy – I don't take much stock into any fighter using Weight Watchers to cut weight. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I just don't want to see him – Garcia could – no matter how good he does at welterweight, he's never going to be one of the greats at welterweight. But because of the history of the division at 140 not being so stacked, he could become one of the sort of top five guys there if he stuck around and put together a run of 15, 16 defenses. I mean,
just remember this, though, Rob.
That,
most
like
fighters of this ilk at this stage of their careers, at age 25, look at Adrian Broner. They've already moved up in weight. There comes a point in time, if you're that lethargic at age 25, that's your body basically telling you that, hey, you need to move up here. He looked like a guy. He looked like a three-legged horse. He just simply did not have another gear on Saturday night.
No, and
maybe
you,
I didn't.
There was no bounce in him. There was no energy. And he's had that before. He looked good on the night against Batista. That's why I said he should have just dropped the mic and moved to 47. Instead, he stayed one more time to defend that title, make some money. It's probably, you know, having a title makes him a certain, you know, minimum, you know, in his contract. So you squeeze out one more defense, and then you see there's a big fight for you at 47 or, you know, a decent payday at 47. So you can move up. But I think, you know, one, I would get a nutritionist, and two, I would move to 47. The biggest thing I see with fighters these days is a lack of knowledge. Sports still in the dark age when it comes to nutrition and hydration and how to take care of your body, what things you should take at what times. So that would be something as champion I would spend some money on. Maybe go to the...
It's no secret that the three best fighters in the world, in my opinion, are Rigondeaux, Mayweather, and Ward, and I don't think they're piling on 15 pounds when they come into the next fight. Those pounds might make you stronger, but they don't make you more skillful. And I think they're losing a lot in training camp when they're not, when they're concentrating on making weight instead of honing their skills.
No argument there. Rob, listen, we're running out of time here. We got to let you go, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Let's get to another call here. 347-215-7598. Lines are open. We got another 10 minutes. Gabe, who's next?
In the 203, you're live on the next round. 203.
Okay.
Second,
you got a knockdown.
Second knockdown of the night. Going through the list here. 650, you're live on the next round. 650.
Hey, good evening, fellas.
Good. Who is this?
Hey, this is Jess from the Bay Area.
Jess, what can you do? What can we do for you?
Hey, just do you have any updates on our buddy Andy Ruiz, when he's going to be fighting next, where?
Yes.
And is there a venue pick for the Areola fight?
April 26th is the date for Andy Ruiz. He'll be fighting on an Unamas show, and I hopefully he took the edict from Top Rank seriously to drop some pounds, because I thought he looked physically terrible. I mean terrible against Tor Hamer out there in Macau in late November. I know Top Rank was very alarmed, and his manager, Joe Gilardi, he wasn't exactly happy either. As it relates to Areola, who's going to fight May 10th against Stiverne, right now, I talked to Dan Goosen today, they do not have a venue. They hope to have it finalized within the next day or two.
Oh, man. Not yet, though, huh? Do you think it'll be in California?
You know, it's funny. What Don King wanted it in Mexico for some reason, and the other side was not happy about it. Goosen and Areola wanted it in California, or in Mexico, excuse me, and the other side wanted it in California. And so there's a bit of an impasse there. The bottom line is Don King's got to stop acting like it's 1995 and like he controls all the cards. My gut feel, and again, it's just a guess here, it's just speculation, I think this will end up in California.
Will we see Steve Kim there?
It depends on what part of California it is. If it's in driving distance, I will be there, and you can buy me all the drinks you want that night.
I certainly will, my friend. Thanks for taking my call, and keep up the great work.
All right, thank you very much. Gabe, who's next online here?
In the 917, you're live on the next round. 917. Hello?
Good evening, guys.
Yes, who is this?
Good evening.
It's a milk car.
A milk car? Where have you been? Jeez.
I'm actually in Rio de Janeiro right now.
Oh, well, then you know what? I wouldn't even, you know, if I were you, I wouldn't waste my time calling us. I'll give you that.
Well, I always jump on, even if I'm overseas and the time difference is too bad, but here it's not too bad, so I'm happy to be listening in. Great show.
Good.
As always.
Milcar, what's on your mind?
Well, a few people had brought up the name Klitschko, and I just clicked one on the phone because I'm actually interested in seeing Wilder take on Klitschko. Am I crazy to want to see that fight?
No, why not? You know, one of the things that has always left me wondering about the Klitschkos is they always have this great size advantage. It almost looks like a power forward against a point guard. Say what you want about Deontay Wilder, how untested he might be or whatever. He is a guy that could look at them eye to eye and has a jackhammer. He has an eraser. So just from that perspective, I wouldn't mind that fight. Whether he's ready or not, that's a different question. But I do think he does ask them certain questions.
Yeah, I want to see it. And we know that when a guy is of comparable size and has good power that comes down the middle, Vladimir Klitschko can be stopped. He can be hurt. I'd like to see it. I think he's kind of like a sniper. It was almost like a Mikey Garcia performance where he just circled and circled and he measured his man. And when he did, he got him out of there. It was kind of spectacular, but if it didn't look so bizarre, you know, with the right hand that hit the glove. But that shot to the temple, that's a sneaky shot. And especially with a man as big as him doing it. You know, the thing with like guys like Shaq, you know, that are gigantic, or the Klitschko's, all those things that they do that on a normal person, you're not that bothered by. So it'd be interesting seeing if Wilder gets that other kind of part of his game where he's clinching or hitting you, you know, on the hips, hitting all those gray area things. But we're not going to know anything about him until somebody stands up to him, doesn't just get hit for four rounds, but actually hits back, you know, gets past that first wall, that first onslaught.
Yeah, I agree totally. I mean, to me, what's most interesting about the fight is that both of them can get their chins checked by each other. I mean,
in a milk
I just
car.
Get
yeah.
flashbacks of Corey Sanders, a semi-pro golfer, heading to Germany and knocking Klitschko around the ring. I mean, I can definitely see Deontay Wilder with his size, with his speed, and obviously with his power giving Klitschko some trouble, and vice versa as well.
Mm-hmm. Amilcar, being out there in Rio de Janeiro, did you happen to catch Garcia Herrera on a radio broadcast?
You know, the funny thing was that my radio broadcast was chipping in and out.
Oh, okay.
I hate when
that happens.
It was
yeah.
chipping in and out, and I ended up having to watch Ghostface Killah on Couples Therapy on YouTube. So
oh, okay.
I ended
I hear
up watching
you.
That.
Right. It's obvious that you need a new transistor radio then, Amilcar.
But, yeah, I definitely do. But I did see that first fight, and I did get rounds of it in, and I watched the replay on like a Ukrainian upload on YouTube. And I do think Herrera won the fight, but it wasn't like one of the worst robberies I've ever seen. Like, it wasn't up there with like some of the Ricky Burns decisions of the past, for instance.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, Amilcar, we got to run. We're running out of time here, okay?
No, I really appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. Thanks, as always, for the great show.
Absolutely, America. Gabe, do we have
all
any
right,
more
thanks.
Calls? We can probably fit in one more.
Yeah, we do. Let's see. And then 1111. So you're live on the next round.
Okay, yep. I guess not. Gabe, let's wrap it up here. Last week.
All right.
Gabe, last week it was announced by Top Rank, and I don't know if it's officially official, but it looks like it's going to get done. May 17th, the return of the Fabulous Forum in Inglewood. Mike Alvarado takes on Juan Manuel Marquez. Now, I love this event. I mean, again, you could make the point Marquez is avoiding Provodnikov. I would not argue with you. Here's where I think some of the fans are now a little bit chagrined, that the plan is for the winner of this fight to fight the winner of Pacquiao Bradley. You know, here's my take on it. In a separate vacuum, these two fights are fine. In fact, I'm going to look forward to both of them. However, when you're starting to do this playoff system or this own top-ranked tourney where you might be getting these fights again, I mean, think about it. If Marquez wins, he might either face Pacquiao for the fifth time or Bradley again. Do you agree with me that, again, it's too much of a good thing, that this is where, again, the Cold War rears its ugly head?
Yeah, you start to do do-overs and matchups that don't make a lot of sense. I mean, I guess, you know, it's a way to kind of entice Marquez into taking that last Pacquiao fight. But it doesn't really do anything for me at all. It's not very exciting. I think the Cold War is something that needs to come to an end, I think, for that company to really survive. Because look at welterweight, and they've got nothing for Pacquiao. They're at a point where they're either going to get out of the welterweight business as Pacquiao's career comes to an end or do something else. I don't know, but it's kind of grim over there. And it leaves Ruslan Provodnikov out. Understandably, he's dangerous, but this is the part times in the business where it doesn't make a lot of sense for anybody but that company. And as a fan, this is the times I loathe.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of Max Boxing and the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. To the next round, goodbye, everybody.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.